We all know the story of Hansel and Gretel, the two siblings who wander off into the woods and are captured by an evil witch who bakes children into gingerbread. They outsmart the witch in the end and are reunited with their parents. And if you're an opera lover, you recognize that first excerpt from Engelbert Humperdinck's opera Hansel and Gretel. It's the prayer that the brother and sister sing before they fall asleep in the woods. My name is Anthony Freud. I'm the General Director of Lyric Opera of Chicago, and today I'm speaking to you about Humperdinck's fairy tale opera. The musical excerpts are from an EMI Classics recording featuring Anne-Sophie von Otter as Hansel, Barbara Bonney as Gretel, Hannah Schwarz as the mother, Andrea Schmidt as the father, and Mariana Lipovcek as the witch. Jeffrey Tate conducts the Bavarian Radio Symphony Orchestra and the Tölz Boys Choir. Special thanks to EMI for allowing us to use their recording and to Nicholas Ivor Martin for writing this commentary. The words of Hansel and Gretel's prayer are, "When at night I go to sleep, 14 angels watch do keep." It goes on to describe where the angels are placed around the children, at their heads, their feet, and so on. You might think that it's two for each location, two at each hand, two at each foot, two at each of the children's heads and one on each shoulder. But the distribution is more haphazard. There are two angels per hand, but only one per foot. Angels can fly, and the airspace overhead is crowded. Two warmly cover the children, while another two over me hover. The final two angels are more supervisory, having no assigned location. Instead, being there, quote, "to guide my steps to heaven," unquote. Rather than relying on the Madonna or a single guardian angel, the children are assembling a team to look after them. These are not just any angels. The fact that there are 14 of them allows us to identify them in Catholic tradition. They're the so-called 14 Holy Helpers, a collection of saints who were first grouped together in the Rhineland in the 14th century. While most of the 14 helpers were martyred in the 2nd through 4th centuries, one, St. Giles, died as late as the 8th century. And they hailed from every part of the then Christian world: Greece, Turkey, Egypt, Rome, and Sicily. What they had in common was a specialization in disease and death. St. Barbara protected her supplicants from fevers. St. Christopher protected specifically against bubonic plague, while St. Giles protected more generally against all forms of plague. St. Erasmus covered intestinal ailments. St. Vitus was good for epilepsy. St. Denis and St. Agathias both took care of headaches, and so on. Europe in the 14th century had one thing on its mind: the Black Death. So this was a good group of saints to cultivate. But what does it have to do with Hansel and Gretel? The story of Hansel and Gretel originated in Germany and held a special place in German folklore. To Engelbert Humperdinck, this was all important. Humperdinck was an interesting figure in the world of opera. Popular in his day, he was then, as he is now, known primarily for a single work, Hansel and Gretel. The opera itself premiered in Weimar, conducted by no less a luminary than Richard Strauss. Strauss called the opera a masterpiece of the highest quality, all of it original, new, and so authentically German. Except part of the appeal of the opera was that it was not entirely original. The story, taken from the collected works of the Brothers Grimm, was as familiar to Humperdinck's audiences as it is to audiences of today. The tune of the prayer is in fact a German folk tune. Humperdinck peppers his opera with folk music, and the composer himself was both a disciple and an employee of Richard Wagner. Humperdinck worked as musical assistant to Wagner on the premiere of the master's opera Parsifal. He tutored Wagner's son Siegfried in music, and his own works consciously and explicitly aped Wagner's orchestrations and his use of leitmotifs, short musical phrases associated with a character, emotion, or idea. If the prayer tells us something about the composition, it tells us more about the meaning of the opera. It is literally central to the opera. It appears in the middle scene of the middle act, but its importance lies deeper. It's a cliché that opera is a collaborative art form. To present even as relatively small a piece as Hansel and Gretel requires dozens, if not hundreds, of participants, from the composer and librettist to singers, dancers, and orchestral players to the conductor, director, designer, and choreographer. In other words, you need your own team of 14 or 14 score angels. What is important about the collaborative effort is that all of these artists, several of them working in very different artistic mediums, must participate in telling the story, and to do so, they all have to agree on a coherent interpretation. So what is Hansel and Gretel about? One possibility we must consider is that it is about prayer itself. Most composers before Wagner hired professional librettists whom they first met by reading their poems or their novels or attending their plays. After Wagner, many composers decided to stay home and write their own librettos. In spite of his enthusiasm for all things Wagnerian, Humperdinck did not write his own words. For this famous story about a brother and a sister, Humperdinck's librettist was his own sister, Adelheid Vetter. Vetter was an author in her own right, but in this case, her inspiration began with a desire to tell stories to her six children. She lifted the plot from the Brothers Grimm, but she made some important changes, starting with adding this bedtime prayer. For Vetter, I think Hansel and Gretel was at least in part a Christian parable. Her libretto opens with Hansel and Gretel playing when they should be doing their chores. Hansel is impatient, he's hungry, and he wants mother to come home. The more mature Gretel quotes their father's favourite maxim, "When the need is greatest, God will provide." The opera ends with the father himself quoting this bit of wisdom to explain why heaven has punished the witch. When Hansel complains that mother is not home, Gretel shows him the jug of milk they have received as a gift from a neighbour. There will not only be food, but rice pudding. Hansel hungrily skims off some of the cream and begins to dance with his sister. Their mother returns and is scandalised to find the children playing when they should be working. She threatens to beat them with a stick, but in brandishing the stick, she knocks over the all-important jug of milk. The mother sends the children out into the woods to look for strawberries to replace the spilt milk. She asks God to help her feed her children. Another prayer. Sending the children out into the woods is not, as it turns out, a great idea. The mother may not know that there is a cannibalistic witch in the forest, but the father does. He returns home happy and drunk. There's a festival in town, and he's sold all his brooms at a high price. The father lays out what he has bought with the money: bacon, butter, flour, sausages, beans, onions, coffee, and 14 eggs. Why 14? Is he serving breakfast to the angels? True, the first act of the opera ends with the father and mother rushing out into the forest, worried in search of the children, but they only remember the children after laughing and celebrating about their newfound riches. Vetter's religious gloss on the story can't be ignored, but fundamentally, I believe that it is just that, a gloss. As we will see, there is too much else going on in this rich legend for it only to be a tale of divine justice. Act 2 opens with Hansel and Gretel in the woods, picking strawberries to replace the spilt milk. Hansel is hungry again, and he and his sister first share and then fight over the strawberries. Night falls, and they hear voices. In Vetter's libretto, the siblings have not been sent into the forest maliciously. That's not to say, though, that the mother acted innocently. It was she who knocked over the milk, and she did so while in the act of threatening to beat the children. And she's the one who sent them unescorted into a haunted forest. The Grimm fairy tale is quite different. In the fairy tale, the mother, actually the children's stepmother, is more worried about her own hunger than that of the children. She wants the father to abandon the children in the forest. Whether they die there or not is immaterial, though not unexpected. This is a time of starvation, and the mother's plan is to save herself at their expense. The first attempt to get rid of Hansel and Gretel fails because Hansel drops a trail of pebbles which allows him to find his way home. When the parents take them even further into the forest, Hansel tries to repeat his success, this time with breadcrumbs. The plan is foiled by forest animals who eat the crumbs, erasing the trail. the Brothers Grimm seldom shy away from horror and abuse. This forest is not populated by Disney critters. None of this appears in the opera. Vetter has cleaned up the story, making the parents more emotional and irresponsible than evil. She has also given credence to the idea that Hansel and Gretel is not a religious parable, but a so-called cautionary tale. In other words, a story told to frighten children out of misbehaving. But what are they being warned not to do? Wander off into the forest alone, perhaps. This is sometimes put forward as the moral not just of the opera, but of the fairy tale as well. For me, this is hard to understand. It's not like Hansel and Gretel wanted to go wandering out into the dark forest at night. Certainly, they did not want to be abandoned and starve to death. They wanted to stay home, eat rice pudding, and dance. If there is a moral there, it would have to be one for the parents. Don't send your children out to play in traffic. In the Grimm's fairy tale, that is, in essence, the point of what the parents are doing. Others have suggested that the story is a caution against greed. Hansel's lusting after the milk in Act 1 helps set in motion what follows. He and Gretel's fight over the strawberries in Act 2 might be related to their staying out too late and getting lost. And though we have not yet gotten to it in the story, we know that the witch is able to capture them so easily because they cannot resist her delicious gingerbread house. But again, such an explanation appears to fall short. Perhaps it would work if Hansel and Gretel were well-fed children who couldn't stop eating candy, like Augustus Gloop in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. But the Brothers Grimm fairy tale, although it was published in 1812, is thought to have originated in the same century as the worship of the 14 Holy Helpers. The Holy Helpers, remember, were assembled to combat the Black Death, which swept through Europe after 1347. But the century had started with the so-called Great Famine, a multi-year disaster that caused millions of deaths by starvation across the continent. The famine followed the end of an unusually warm climatic period that was tied to the relative prosperity of the 11th through 13th centuries. Stories of cannibalism and infanticide followed in the wake of the Great Famine. With this context, one very important meaning of the Hansel and Gretel story comes into focus. Hunger. The opera opened, remember, with Hansel's hunger. The tragedy is set in motion by the spilling of a single jug of milk. Act 1 ends with the parents so elated over bacon, butter, flour, and sausages that they momentarily forget their children. Humperdinck called his opera a Märchenoper, literally a fairy opera. And as darkness falls in the forest, Hansel and Gretel are approached by the Sandman, a mystical creature who sings them to sleep after their prayer. Humperdinck's score then includes a ballet, in which the 14 angels do, in fact, come to watch over the sleeping children. In our production, you'll see something far different. This is the production that I commissioned when I was General Director of Welsh National Opera, which began as a co-production with Lyric. Directed and conceived by Richard Jones and designed by John McFarlane, this production takes hunger as its central theme. The angel ballet becomes a choreographed dream, in which the two famished, abandoned children attend a banquet cooked by puffy, overstuffed pig chefs, attended by a fish butler. The scene is at once comical and profoundly moving, reminding us that this is no nutcracker, but a story with a chilling, not-so-hidden meaning. The painted drops that appear throughout this production of Hansel and Gretel feature grotesque open mouths, and Act 3 moves to the gleaming steel kitchen of the witch. Director Richard Jones's conception for the piece is that every act takes place in a kitchen. Act 1 is set in the family kitchen, while the forest is the magical kitchen of the chefs and the fish butler. Having slept through the ballet, the children are awoken by the dew fairy. After wandering around the forest, the children soon discover the tempting gingerbread house belonging to the witch. She encourages them to taste her house and to come inside. Today, we think of gingerbread as a Christmas treat. Indeed, the opera Hansel and Gretel has long been associated with Christmas, but not because of the gingerbread house. The piece premiered on December 23, 1893, and the association stuck. Gingerbread had, for the opera, a more sinister connotation. The witch, who now tempts Hansel and Gretel to come into her house, has been baking children into cookies and eating them. The witch's confection, according to the score, is Lebkuchen, a German cake that is similar to but not exactly the same as our gingerbread. The derivation of the German word is ambiguous. Does it come from Leib, which just means loaf, or is it from Leben, meaning life? A Lebkuchen made from children is thus a grim pun. Just as we know Hansel and Gretel's parents only as father and mother, most of us remember the central evil character of the story as just the witch. But in fact, she has a name, which she tells the children. Her name is Rosina Leckermaul. Leckermaul meaning literally tasty mouth, or better, sweet tooth in German. The protagonists of the story may be starving, but the evil witch lives in such abundance that she can indulge her passion for dessert. And Maul in German has a raw, more animalistic connotation than just mouth. By itself, Maul means maw or muzzle. The witch attempts to cook Hansel, but his sister fools her by playing stupid and instead pushes her into her own oven. The witch is baked into one of her own cookies, and Hansel and Gretel use the witch's magic to revive her previous victims. In the fairy tale, the father now returns to discover his missing children. The mother has died, but we're not told how or why. This is a bit mysterious. Since we know it's only been 2 days since the children were sent away from home, the obvious inference is that the witch and the mother are one and the same person. In the opera, Hansel and Gretel's parents both return for a happy ending. But in our production, the piece ends with the family and the other children sitting down to feast on baked witch. Cannibalism continues alive and well. The eater is eaten.
Hexe hexen kann, wie sie hart, knusper hart, Zedern und zum Kuh.
Schafft uns das Wunder!